Welcome to NavChat, the show for the New Zealand orienteering and navigation sports community. Hi Tom, welcome back to NavChat.
Hi Gene. It's not just a one-hit wonder. We're back for a second time. So
yep.
What have we got coming up?
Yeah, we've got a few interesting things today. We're going to talk about injuries a little bit and cross-training when running. And we've also got a guest interview with Cam Delisle talking about his auto-generated LiDAR maps that he's putting together of the whole of New Zealand. So that's really interesting. Nice. And we've got a coaching segment as well. We're going to look at height judgment and extracting information from contours. And also, of course, we've got news from around the country. And yeah, we'll get into some of the happenings.
Indeed,
but first,
indeed.
How was Nationals?
Oh, great. I felt bad for you not being able to get out there in that forest. I think full credit to Wellington for putting on a wicked weekend of racing. I think my personal favourite would have had to be that middle distance map. Just such a special area with the changes in vegetation, the fast, the slow, and just the compact nature of the courses. So many people out in the forest while you're racing. It was cool. Mm-hmm. How about you? How's injury life?
Yeah, it's been interesting. I'm feeling fit. I've managed to get a fairly good routine going that I think a lot of people could learn from, actually. So currently I can only do 20-minute runs, and I do four of them a week, which is, you know, just an hour 20 of running. It's not a huge amount, but I'm getting on the elliptical trainer at the gym two or three times a week.
Mm.
And they're hour sessions, and I'm really pushing the intensity, doing like a 3 minutes times six, with 1 minute recoveries or a 25 minute tempo, and doing something that's pretty tough and really gets the legs burning. And I'm doing about an hour walking on average each day, just in the morning, get out for an hour. And I think that contributes a little bit. There's some crossover from brisk walking. Maybe it's only 25% gets carried over, but it all adds up. So between all that activity, plus just work in the gym and some yoga, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm feeling healthy. I'm feeling fit, but the injury itself is not yielding to our therapy and rehab at the moment. So still trucking.
Have you thought about a total? Have you thought about a total break?
I have. I've done 2 whole month total breaks over the past 11 months, in various strategies. So yeah, there's a lot of things have been tried, but we've got to keep working. And if we are going to take a certain approach, then, you know, we stick to it, give it an honest go so that we know if it's worked or failed. And yeah, currently we're still in the cortisone, the post cortisone injection rehab phase.
Well, I hope it settles down soon. I know that the guests that you spoke to about this week maybe has some orienteering related things that you could do even in your injured state, things that you could maybe do from the couch. It was Cam Delisle you spoke to, right?
That's Cam Delisle. That's right. Yep. I've been following his work with the LiDAR generated maps. In fact, my computer's been rented out quite a lot to make some of these maps, along with many others around the country. So
cool.
Let's
jump to the interview, eh?
Let's do it. Thanks, Cam, for coming on NavChat. And let's get into the project that you've been doing. I know a few of us on the map chat have through the Facebook page with New Zealand orienteering mapping, and maybe even the international orienteering mapping have seen this. Mm. So take us through this project, this website that I'm looking at the moment.
So the idea of this project is we've got all this sort of, it's called LiDAR data, which is laser data of the elevation of the vegetation. And we've got it for a whole lot of areas in New Zealand. And we've processed all that data and we've turned it into a gigantic orienteering map, which we're slowly adding more and more areas to. So as you can see, there's all these little bits and pieces all over the country of data that we've turned into this gigantic orienteering map.
So where is the data coming from?
Yeah, so the data's, it's been collected by all the different regional councils in New Zealand, and Land Information New Zealand has sort of gathered it all together on a website called Open Topography. And from there, we've just downloaded the data, processed it, and then put it up on this website in a whole lot of map tiles.
Cool. So whatever this data is it can be used to recreate like a fairly realistic orienteering kind of map. Let's take a look at how this data is captured and exactly what that means, because it must be pretty hard for some people to imagine this whole process. So talk us through this.
Yeah, so the way it works is LiDAR data is basically captured by a plane flying overhead, the New Zealand's landmass, I guess you'd say.
How high is that?
100 meters up, and 200 meters up or something, and it's got a laser on board, which is shooting pulses at the ground, or pulses of light. And when those pulses of light hit the ground, they're reflected upwards, and based upon the time it takes for it to return and the intensity of the light that returns, what you get is a picture you can see in the bottom right there, which is showing that each point is recorded as data and with the intensity and the height of the return, and what that you can do with that data is convert it into a picture of the ground beneath you, but also not just the ground, but also the trees. So you've got a very accurate 3D representation of the terrain below you. And if you ever look at this on the left there, by sort of examining the intensity of the light coming back at you, just using some fancy algorithms, I guess you could call it, what you can do is you can figure out, 5 million points in this example which show the ground, and then 5 million points which show the vegetation above.
So the difference between those two, because if you imagine like shining a torch on something, different things will illuminate a little bit differently, and maybe you can put yourself in the perspective of the plane just shooting this like a pulse torch and just seeing what stands out. But of course it's got a really accurate clock basically, so it can tell the difference between a beam of light that's traveled 200 meters there and back, and light that's traveled 201 meters there and back. Yeah, so it's a very fast stopwatch.
It's a pretty impressive technology, because what you can do with it is it can measure down to, I think around New Zealand, the accuracy is about 1 centimeter. So to within 1 centimeter, you can get the height of all these returns accurately, which just opens up so many opportunities, to essentially create a big 3D model of the ground. And if you've got a 3D model like that of all this stuff below you, the ground, the trees, even buildings and things like that, then what you can do is, looking at this, you can quite clearly see the shape of the land, the landmass. But also, if you look on the left here, the vegetation's green. You can actually pick out here the pine trees, the shapes of the pine trees.
You can just see, those branches kind of reaching out. And so that's the light coming down, bouncing off these pine branches that are out, 10 meters high in the air and going back to the plane. But the brown is the light that's come all the way down. And I guess it's hitting the grass or the pine needles, just whatever makes up the solid ground. Is that right?
Yeah. So it's hitting the solid ground. And I think what sort of happens is because it's hit something really solid like that, the intensity is higher. And what this, the algorithms they use to process this data can do is detect it as being the ground rather than being a tree. And if you have a look then on the left, all the brown dots is what sort of someone's gone for a process this data afterwards, and that shows the ground. And you can see that on the top right as well, that's to strip away all the vegetation. You can get quite a accurate 3D impression of the ground. And then when where you've got like open ground, you're obviously going to have a very large number of points returning. But when you've got trees, not all the points are going to get through the trees. But if you look on the right there, enough are getting through that you've got some sort of pretty accurate representation of the ground.
Right. You can imagine that, like, if the tree canopy was too dense, the light might not actually make it all the way to the ground level. So you might get some kind of shadowing effect, much like if you had a torch and you put an object in front of it, you wouldn't be able to see the wall behind the object because the light doesn't get through.
Yeah. So you want to shoot down enough points, that some, light gets through everywhere, and therefore you've got an accurate representation. Accurate enough representation. If you look actually in the bottom right there, what I've highlighted is you've got quite, you're not just picking up that there's trees. So that's a side-on view, but you can also pick up that there's thick vegetation below the trees. So it's not just returning with the vegetation height on the top.
Mm-hmm.
It's also some of the light's penetrating through the canopy to bushes below.
Mm. So you can imagine like the very tree top, there might be some lights bouncing off that. And then the whole trunk, the whole way down and all the branches, there's light coming off at all the different heights. And if there's some bushes in the 2 or 3 meters closer to the ground, there's even more points bouncing off that. And then that ground is basically the final big point where nothing gets past.
Yep. Yeah. The final sort of return that's coming up.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. So how accurate is this stuff?
Yeah. So that's the big question, isn't it? So I think in New Zealand, sort of before this technology existed, you kind of had two types of map, right? You had like Land Information New Zealand maps. So that's the topo 50 that I think a lot of people who do tramping and things like that will be familiar with. And that's sort of, you know, it's got 20 meter contours. It's fairly accurate, but it's not really enough to navigate accurately off. And then you've got obviously the orienteering maps, which, you know, costs a fortune to make, but they're very, very accurate, have every little sort of detail. Someone's gone through, visually seen it. And if you compare the orienteering map actually to this new LiDAR, also omap.nz, it's actually amazingly very similar. All the shapes are basically the same. It's the same contour interval here if you compare the two, what's circled. And it's only really the minor details and the tracks that don't show up. The way I think of it, it's almost like a different map has come through and kind of made it the map a little bit simpler. Incredibly accurate.
Cool. So what are the other things? Because of course, this is just a computer algorithm trying to pick up features and interpret them as if it's an orienteering map. So it seems to be picking up some cliffs where I don't believe there are any cliffs in that area. So what's going on there?
Yeah. So I think what you're always obviously going to understand with something like this is that it's just a computer algorithm. So when it's detecting a cliff, what it's sort of looking at is the ground may sort of, it can detect how steep the ground is because obviously you've got sort of this ground profile. And what it's saying is if the ground gets above a certain steepness, it's a cliff. But of course, we know that, you know, certain terrain, especially like sand dunes, you can get these very steep, sort of short, steep sections, which aren't actually cliffs, but may show up as such in the data. It seems to be mostly a sand dunes issue. I've done some mapping out in Riverhead Forest, which is clay, and basically every cliff that's appearing in the omap.nz is actually a sizable cliff in the terrain.
What are these purple contours? Do you know what they're about?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So I think one of the limitations of something that's sort of automatically generated like this, which we probably don't really think about, is that when you have an orienteering map, you've got these things called slope lines, which sort of point which way is down in quite confusing terrain. You can sort of see that on the left if you look closely. There's contours which have these little tags on them. But the problem with this automatically generated map is it's very difficult to generate those slope lines. There's a few reasons why, but it's basically just this sort of idea of it's very hard to get them in the right places because you don't really want them everywhere, you just want them in some places. So what the purple contours represent is when you've got a depression. So it goes down when it maybe doesn't seem like it should. So instead of using a slope line, the algorithm's creating these purple contours, which sort of is the replacement for that.
Yeah, and that's a reasonable way to map also. I mean, as long as you know the language of the map, then you can work through it. But yeah, I'm optimistic at some stage if the developers of the software continue to work on it, then they can also find a way of getting in some of the slope lines without having, a million slope lines all close together. There must be some kind of logic that they can work out at some stage.
It's sort of something that might change in the future, I guess. Cool. So I think one of the sort of the use cases for this OMAP sort of, it's not just about orienteers. You've got the sort of this gap currently where you've got these topo 50 maps which aren't particularly accurate, and then you've got only a few orienteering maps around the country. And, people like adventure races, for instance, they sort of rely on these top of 50 maps, but sometimes they're surprisingly quite inaccurate. So in this case, this is an example of an OMAP data that's been processed down near Rotorua. And what it's sort of showing you here is that, you know, you've got this top of 50 map, which is sort of telling you it's a pine forest and not much else. But with this LiDAR map, you can see the, you know, the difference in runnability between the sort of bushy areas of the pine forest and then the not so bushy areas.
But also that being shown up as white and green on the auto-generated map.
This is green. Obviously the white is quite easy to run and easy to push through, whereas the green can be, you know, quite slow, it's quite bushy. But also, like, the other thing that's shown up here is that the power line that's been mapped in the top of 50 is actually, you know, 400 meters out from where it should be. And, you know, the great thing about this LiDAR data is very accurate.
Didn't see it.
Whereas top of 50 is obviously just some humans gone through and mapped it.
And it could be roughly 50 years old.
And it could be 50 years old. Yeah, exactly. So, there's quite a difference there, I think, and it's almost like a replacement in many terms of for top of 50 in a lot of applications that sort of, you know, they're not quite, you know, orienteering, you know, as we think of it, but like maybe like Rogaines or adventure races or even, you know, people out tramping. This is sort of, it's creating something that's better than what is already there, sort of filling a niche.
Cool. So let's have a look back to the map. How much more of New Zealand do we have to go, and how much LiDAR data is actually available?
So currently the government sort of commissioned this big LiDAR capture across the country, the idea being to capture 80% of the country. And so far we've processed around about, I think it's 25% we're up to, or 20 to 25%. Mm-hmm. And over the sort of the next 2 years, that remaining 60% that they've sort of committed to capture is slowly going to sort of drift in and feed in. So at the moment we've got data for all of Northland, and that's the current, so the current area that's being processed. So it's uploaded in batches. So there's another 2,000 or so square kilometers to upload in the next few weeks there. And that will fill in all the gap so that the map extends from Kaitaia all the way down to the Bombays.
Cool.
Yep. And then after that, it's sort of, you know, slowly, I think Bay of Plenty's got data that's going to come in, and that will fill that whole area. Waikato has also got data, and sort of feed down the country. And the other big area, of course, that's sort of slowly coming out, as I'm sure some South Islanders have noticed, is the Canterbury region. And the problem there is that while the data does exist, it's very patchy and very sort of, it's not prepared quite as well. So the processing's been a bit disjointed down there and a bit patchy, but slowly it's going to emerge into a one big chunk of map around Canterbury over the next sort of couple of months. Yeah.
Cool. Let's take a quick look at somewhere random that we might be interested in exploring. So I noticed there was some white showing up here in the Wairarapa, and I don't know if this is a forest that's ever been used for orienteering or anything, but it looks pretty big, and we've scouted it essentially. You can just jump on omap.nz and check out the runnability, see the size of the hills, get an okay sense of the contour detail, get a sense of how uncrossable or crossable some of the valleys and reentrance might be. I mean, this is pretty amazing. This reduces the cost of scouting new areas.
Definitely, yeah. I think just one of the massive advantages, you know, if you go and scout an area, you don't generally have a good idea of where to look, I think. You sort of have a rough idea from using these other sources, but what this can do is you can just look around the country, find an area that looks good, figure out where you need to visit, and then you can go out and get actually a really good picture of what's going on. So, you know, especially a place like this is in the middle of nowhere, you know, sort of it makes it far more sort of possible to go and scout a terrain like that, I think.
And what about an area that, like, we know and love? You were showing the kind of Slater Road area before. Yep. Let's jump into somewhere quite typical, like Woodhall Forest. Here's the mountain bike park right here off Restall Road. Very common area for orienteering over the years. Some might recognize this. is this an okay base map for making new maps, or is there so much that's missed off these extremely detailed sand dune contours?
So that's a good question. It probably really needs someone to try it to know for sure. But in my opinion, it's sort of what you've got to understand as well is that it's 5 meter contours. So, you know, if you're going to map a 2.5 meter contour map, orienteering map, you probably want something a bit more with a bit more contours and that on it. But certainly if you've got nothing as a base map, it's you know, it's going to give you the right general impression of the you know, the shapes, and really you only need to add a little bit of detail I've found in places. So I've done a map using omap.nz over in Riverhead, and the data in Auckland is particularly good, this new data we've got, and with that it's sort of, you know, it's taken the effort down from you know, traditionally even with LiDAR you'd have to do a lot of shaping of contours, maybe it missed the odd gully. But if you scroll in there, this is the area here I'm mapping. The contours are so accurate in most places that they don't even need to be changed, I think. It's just sort of adding in depressions, shaping the vegetation a bit better. But
cool. One last question. Where did these mountain bike / motorbike tracks come from? Where does the data from those? This is a mystery I've always wanted to understand.
Yeah, that's a very good question. So one of the best sources of open data with tracks and things is something called OpenStreetMap. So OpenStreetMaps, people have thrown in, you know, council road data, drawn in their own mountain biking tracks and things like that. It's also got buildings. And what we've done is we've taken exports of that OpenStreetMap data. And then while we're creating these map tiles, it's also gone over the top of them and added in, you know, sort of figured out what sort of a road or a track should be mapped as, and then mapped it as its orienteering symbol. So yeah, if you zoom in here, you can see all the roads and the tracks in Riverhead, and obviously the different classifications.
So who's uploaded these to OpenStreetMap?
I'm not sure. Totally sure of Riverhead. Obviously, it's not perfect, as you'll know from. Having mapped it yourself, the mountain bike tracks in there. But yeah, I'm assuming those, especially in Woodhull, have been mapped by mountain bikers. So hard to tell what the accuracy actually is, but it's sort of it's an indicative kind of thing. Certainly the roads will be accurate. But
cool. Well, thanks a lot for taking us through that. And for anyone who's interested, stay tuned to the progress on omap.nz. And there's also a Facebook page. Is that right?
Yep. So there's just search up OMAP. I think it's just omap.nz on Facebook. And sort of every month or every couple of weeks, we're posting an update on there. OMAP update on the website and then linking to it on Facebook. So
cool.
Way to follow the project.
Cool. Thanks a lot, Cameron. I'm sure that people will find this really interesting.
Yep. Yeah. I look forward to seeing how people will put it to use. And yeah.
Yeah. So what did you think of that? Mind blown?
Mind blowing. I think, I mean, for me, 1 centimeter resolution from a laser shot out of a plane. I mean, that's magic, really. I can't begin to think how that happens.
Yeah, it's pretty tough. And of course, that in theory, the 1 centimeter is good. When it hits a blade of grass, you know, there's more than 1 centimeter variation in where the grass is. So that's pretty much any more technical progress on the resolution isn't really going to help the orienteering beyond this point. So it's all about the data processing from this stage. Like, the technology is no longer the limit. It's amazing we can get such accurate data. It's all about the smarts on the computer.
It was cool as well how Cam mentioned all these other uses for the data, potentially like more accurate mapping of power lines and all that sort of stuff.
Detecting a power line like in the air, something that wide. Yeah.
Pretty impressive. Have you been out running on any of these auto-generated maps?
We have. We did do one in Riverhead. And
How was it? How did it go?
Good. Yeah, it was good. It picked up the thinned branches on the ground. It displayed that as green stripe. That was reasonably good. The contours were usable, although they definitely felt different to how a fieldworked orienteering map would have been. So yeah, it was workable. I'd be more skeptical about the sand dune areas. I think there's a lot of detail on these maps that the processing isn't picking up on yet, but a Spur Gully kind of map like Riverhead I thought was usable.
Yeah, the only one I've tried had a bit of I think the algorithm got a bit confused by New Zealand native bush too. Didn't quite know what to make of Nikko palms. Not a bad thing. I mean, it's just a different way of representing the terrain. All the, like you said before, all the data's there. And contours. Now, that is one part of these maps that seems to be pretty good. We are going to hone in on contours for the coaching session. What have you got for us?
Yeah, let's take a look at our coaching segment for today. So this is the map from Slater Road.
So cool. this looks like Route Gadget.
Yeah, that's right. So this is on Route Gadget, which you can access at rg.orienteering.org.nz. And most of the events in New Zealand are put up on this. And at some stage, we hope all clubs will have this as part of their post-event routine. They upload splits to WinSplits and they upload the courses to Route Gadget. And it's available for people to jump on afterwards and put their routes on. For example, someone here is in green has gone and put their route on so that other people can look at it and share it. So I'm going to start by having a quick look at Orange Short for our coaching. That's Orange Long. No, that's Orange Short. Yep.
So I think we're looking at 6 to 7, and you are going to tell us about how you would use contours in this league.
Yeah, that's right. So
what's the context? What part of our orienteering process do we use these contours in?
So in the planning phase, we're establishing what are the challenges of the league ahead of us and what are the opportunities. So are there tracks that can speed us up? Is there dense vegetation or steep hills that will slow us down? Maybe the detail on the map makes navigation very hard, or maybe it makes it very easy. And it's important just when you're planning a leg, before you begin the leg, that you just assess these things quickly. And I'm going to give us some tips to help making that process easier.
Okay, so what jumps out on 6 to 7?
Yeah, so first thing about 6 to 7 is obviously there is this really steep section here. And we all know that steep hills are worth avoiding. And hills in general, we don't want to climb any more than we need to. So I think the best way to first think about 6 to 7 is to pick up that there's firstly this steep hill that we don't want to go up any more than we need to. Mm-hmm. Also, the control is midway on the slope. You can go up a lot higher or you can go down a lot higher. And I think it's worth tracking the contour backwards, finding out which control the contour is on, and then tracking backwards. And now you can see that it's on this contour here. So what this tells us is there's no point in avoiding this large steep area any more than going over here, because you're not saving any climb actually. Even if you stay low through here, you still have to do the climb ultimately to get to the control. So the first thing you want to learn is when you come up this hill is if you're aiming for this contour, then you know, you need to get your direction right from the start, not just avoiding the hill more than you need to. And then
it's kind of like what you're saying is it's important on a leg, any leg really, but especially one with the contour rich area, to make sure you think about climb in terms of the whole leg, not just the scary steep rocky bits.
That's exactly right. The first challenge of the leg you could solve to the detriment of the second half of the leg.
Totally. Like you could go all the way down to the fence thinking that you're saving climb, but actually you're just adding a whole bunch of distance and doing the same amount of climb.
Exactly right. And there's obviously a route as well where there's taking on too much climb. And we'll get into some thoughts on the next leg. But the take home from this leg is don't go around more than you need to.
Okay, nice.
And working that contour backwards from the control can make it very obvious for you.
Okay, cool. So what about a leg where the whole leg is up or the whole leg is down? What do we do there?
So let's have a look at 7 to 8. I think this is interesting for a number of reasons. The first reason being that it's actually overwhelming. There's a lot of detail on the map. There's a lot of contours, a lot of tracks, and we have that reaction.
What's up and what's down? It's kind of hard to tell.
Yeah. So I think it's worth taking, you know, 20 seconds at least to work out this leg. Checking out where are these slope lines going and zooming out, just having a look at the 30,000 foot view. Look at these index contours. Just trace them out in your head.
And so index contour, every fifth contour, 5 meter contours, that's every 25 meters, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think just doing this, you feel like you're wasting time, but it will pay off. So now you can see that this whole leg is really just going up these big index contours. All you're doing is heading uphill the whole leg. And there's really no downhill in this leg. And therefore, there's no opportunities to avoid the climb. You've actually got to take it on. The control is actually only one contour down from the hilltop. So once you have that in your mind, it changes the game. There's nothing to avoid. There's no possibility to avoid the climb. So the conclusion is, you have to go straight.
Yeah, my eye was drawn immediately right and left on this leg. You see all those big, close to the contours in the middle, and I thought, oh, you could shoot back towards the triangle and then come up in from the right, or you could maybe go up to the far left, round that edge of that green gully and up. But like you say, it's the same amount of climb. You might as well just go straight and save yourself some distance.
100%. We'll jump to a leg on the orange long, which again is a classic one. It's probably more simple than these other ones, but it cannot be overstated. Sometimes they're not all up or all down. Sometimes we do have a contour feature like this that it's important to realize that there's a spur here.
Yep.
And it is an up and a down. So I'll just draw these contours in. So if you do decide to take on the climb up and over, then do so knowing that there is also a way around. And I think it's important to go through this process when you're planning each leg so that you can figure out confidently whether there's a route choice like this one with an up and a down and an opportunity to go around, or whether it's just a straight up or a straight down, in which case you should just go straight because there's nothing to avoid.
Okay. So you're advocating that in terrain that's got more contours, we should invest time at the start of a leg to make sure we understand, is it up, down, flat, or basically what is the topography before we commit to extra distance of a route choice?
Yep, that's right. Try to have that some sense of a 3D model in your head about the terrain that you're approaching.
Okay. It's what about on short legs? Is there anything we can use on a short leg?
We'll try a shorter one here. Again, I'll just get people to take a few seconds to look at this leg. And I think my first reaction is, what are the significant features on this leg? But actually, I think that's irrelevant on this leg. There's actually a trick for this leg that can simplify everything. You just have to take a moment to follow the contour that you're on with your eyes. Just follow it along. Boom, both controls are at the same height. You don't actually have to read the map to get from 2 to 3. All you have to do is make sure that as you're running around the side of the hill, you don't go up and you don't go down. And obviously there's some challenge in that, but I think if you use your eyes and look around the slope, just pick a point that's at eye level, run to it. Pick another point that's at eye level, run to it. Also, animal trails are quite helpful as well. They often contour quite nicely.
Okay, so even on the short legs, we should know not just our direction, but we should know whether we're going up, down, or flat.
That's right.
Okay, cool.
We'll
and I guess on. if we integrate that into that whole like direction simplification, know where you're going approach, I guess that kind of comes in the simplification part.
It absolutely does.
We can use these contours to save us from having to read all of the point detail that's scattered through this kind of terrain.
Yes. And imagine if I gave you a list of like a comprehensive orienteering technique set, and these are all the things you could possibly do to nail your next control. it would take you 5 minutes to plan each leg because there'd be so many things to consider. Yeah, you'd have to,
the pros and the cons and like, yeah. Ooh, today I'm feeling confident about my, yeah, I know what you mean. This is it's another tool in the toolbox, right?
It is. And to be able to pick the right tool for the right job from the start saves you a lot of time.
All right. Should we do one last leg on here?
Yeah. Let's have a look at 5 to 6. If you feel overwhelmed looking at 5 to 6, you're in good company. There's a lot going on in this leg. There's these tracks that can make your life simple for you, or they could make things confusing if you're getting overwhelmed by them.
To me, they kind of just clutter it up, really. I'm turning my head to try and look at which way it goes, but they none of them are really parallel to direction of travel. So I think they're potentially just a red herring.
Good observation. Let them go. So what are the things that are really going to slow you down or speed you up on this leg? I think, the most important thing to notice is that there's this very steep section here. So the box I'm drawing here encloses a steep hill that runs up this way. Just take a bit of time to count the contours there. See that I'm telling the truth. The slope lines are pointing down. So there's like a big barricade around the control that you can't avoid. The control is up high. So regardless,
if we go wide, we're not going to save anything. So we might as well go straighter. Okay.
That's right. There's no way. Really, there's no way to avoid it. So what we do next.
You go ahead. What were you
going to say? Yeah, we'll just add to it. Let's draw on this other steep slope in here. And this is going up this way. That's up. Drawing the upward direction here. Can you avoid that?
Not really, no.
So you've kind of, you have realizing what the challenge is and accepting your fate early, I think is quite important here. And the conclusion is then just use whatever gives you the most confidence. Maybe it's
for me, maybe I it's wonder the track. Because like you said, if you ignore all the tracks, you've got this in the middle of the map, just you've got where the track kind of curves back down a gully on that first slope. You've got a nice stepping stone there, that big re-entrant. Yep.
Or the hill take your pick.
Yeah. Just make your way straight towards the big slope. Identify the hill next to the re-entrant, straight down into the flat area, straight across. And then you could pretty much potentially use that track to give you a bit of an easier run up the hill, or you could just go straight up the hill. And then you've got a known point when you exit really close to the control, up to a hilltop and into the number 6. Yeah,
so if you're on this track, you can pick up this hilltop there, go on in. Yeah, I'm not going to tell people what the best way is to go through this area. It's really up to them. But realize where the challenge is. Yeah, the challenge is not trying to avoid the contours when there's no way to get around. And if there is no way, then you just want to go straight up or use the track that gives you good runability. And trying to, go left, go right. It's all a bit tricky. And the thing that I think will help you to notice that you're actually suffering this problem when you're out on the course is that feeling when you're making these short-term emotional decisions about this hurts, I'm going to contour a bit more because I feel better, I can move faster. And that's a sign that you're making a decision that feels really good in the short term, but isn't helping your course overall. It might just be physically, it feels better, but it might also be giving you navigational challenges by going around because you're not exactly sure where you are anymore. You're making these quick decisions about now I'll go around, and you're losing contact with where you are on the map. So I think being disciplined and ignoring those short-term emotional decisions for the longer term plan that fits what the map is trying to tell you.
Okay. So I guess to like try and wrap that all together, it would be to say as part of your planning process on each leg, you should take a moment always to think about contours. Useful things to look for can be whether a leg is up, flat or down, and also trying to identify if there's any big contour features and deciding if you can avoid them before choosing route choices.
Yep.
That'd be about right. And last of all, like you said, be disciplined. Just because there's a big hill there, you might just have to go up it.
walk up it, crawl up it, whatever you have to do. It's better than like crawling sideways and then crawling up it and then crawling back the other way. Yeah. Okay.
Cool.
Let's jump on to our community news.
All right. So we have asked around the country and got some things happening around the place. Let's
get rid of the annotations. Hang on.
So this first up is from the Deep South, from Southland. And it, rather than the specifics of the newsletter, it's more just like how great their newsletter looks. Big fan of the Penguin logo, and this is pretty slick looking online newsletter from Southland. So great interview with Michael Croxford, interesting stuff about upcoming events. If any other clubs have newsletters that they're sending out, we'd love to see them. It's a great way to catch up with news and what's happening, and really impressed with what Southland have put together here. Going north, you have been working on your league by leagues, Gene.
That's right. I'm doing lots of league by league videos for Orange here in NZ. And these are short coaching videos where I interview someone. I talked to Nick Harris of Northwest Orange Heron Club about the row game that he and I took part in last weekend. And I also talk a little bit about my planning process. So if you're interested in that, jump on to orangeheron.org.nz/coaching/league by league 10. You can see it on the homepage. And there's a rundown and also the video where we go through the decisions we took and the planning process. And interestingly, how I managed to win the Rogaine while walking, which although I'm a brisk walker, I think it was a good lesson for a lot of people in just making very rational decisions about what they're trying to do. And it's not that I walked faster. There were a lot of people who covered up to 1.5 kilometers more than I did. And I can still
remember being at a junior camp when Peter Uber from Sweden could walk around all the training exercises faster than all of us. Staying on the ONZ website, we've also got the New Zealand Secondary Schools paper team that's been named. So the Haru and the Karahiwi paper teams this year, sadly not traveling to Australia, but with New Zealand schools sadly not being able to be held either. Just a bit of recognition for our top secondary school orienteers.
Yeah, I thought that was a nice touch just to release the team because everyone's had a lot of disappointments this year. And just to say, you know, we recognize that you guys have put in the effort and you've put out good performances. I think that's a nice touch.
Yeah, indeed. Moving south from Auckland, we've got Orienteering Waikato. They're definitely on the Rogaine buzz down there, which is cool. They've got up here, they've got one of their rugged Rogaines from July out at Killarney Lake and near Matamata, I think. They are getting some wicked numbers along. And while they have had to cancel a few this year with COVID, they've got a whole lot more planned for 2021. Waikato has really embraced technology too, and they've been using MapRun, the app, for running their urban street series. I think that's a great use of technology. I've had a little bit of a play around on it. I haven't tried an event. Have you done one, Gene? Have you been out?
No, I haven't taken part in the map run, although a number of people in Auckland have, and it was good. It was a good new thing to try. I know there's still some challenges with getting people's phones to be accurate in the right places. That was causing some challenges there, but it's good, and it was a very low overhead way to organize orienteering. Let alone totally. A touch-free way of doing it. Yeah,
totally. Now, another big event coming up for Waikato also involves OBOP and Hawke's Bay, and that is the Battle of the Bays, which I'm as an OBOP member, I'm gutted. I can't be there to race this. So it's at Whakaipo Bay. It's a historical competition between Hawke's Bay and Taupo that OBOP's been invited to join, and it's basically an inter-club competition. Rewards numbers, everyone counts towards it. I think that is pretty cool, and more of these would be good. I think that the inter-club stuff's always super fun. It always throws up some real bolters as well, I reckon.
Yeah, I think that's good, and we're very lucky in Auckland that we have three clubs here, and there's a lot of club rivalry, really healthy competition that helps to push people along and gives people a bit of a nervous start. You know, there's a little bit of pressure to perform, not too much because it's all local and we're all friends, but I think that's really healthy.
they just had the Auckland Relay Champs, right?
They did.
And I hear Northwest thought they had it only for a miss punch to give Auckland the victory. Apparently Auckland won all four grades.
Yes, Auckland have been beating us quite frequently over the past few years, and they've really consolidated their superiority once again. Unfortunately,
nice week, Auckland. Epsom's a tricky map too. It's World Masters. It was used. It's been used for nationals in the last decade. It's a cool area, right in the heart of Auckland.
I haven't seen the maps actually from this one, but I have an inkling that this King of the Car Park is to do with that multi-layered car park. I'm not sure if you remember on the map. It's a bit sneaky because you can come in on one side at one level and come in the other side at the other level. And I think it's mapped. It's mapped okay. Obviously, it's hard and a little bit ambiguous, but it's always very interesting because you have like these route choices on the map where you have to come back out and around. So I suspect there was some interesting legs here that they've have caused people to decide to count those times and announce a King of the Car Park.
Nice. We have another club in Auckland too. Counties Manukau hosted the Auckland Area Champs on Plantation Farm and on what I reckon could be one of the best maps on the Awhitu Peninsula, Kohikohi. I think this map's epic. It's got a great mix of the green, the lupins, the pine forest. Just a good, honest, classic counties map. And Cam Delisle, this is from his online map library, took the win in both grades for Elite Men. Well done, Cam.
Yeah, pretty tidy route there by Cam. He's really running the straight lines very well and not being pushed off his line unless he really needs to, like 4 to 5, where it's obvious to not take on climb just to have lost it again. But, you know, all these legs where straight is great and there's no obstacles in the way, he's really doubling down on that compass and that direction. So
this would be a map where those contour points would really come into play as well, I think. So changing speed a little bit, New Zealand Rogan Champs was on as well this month. Chris Fawn and Greg Hamilton, another national title. Reports I hear is that it was a pretty miserable bit of weather and the conditions really deteriorated. I had someone claiming it was too cold to navigate. I don't know how.
Rain is frozen.
Yeah. Here's the route from Tim Farrant and Joe Williams, who took the win in the open mixed grade and actually got second overall. Again, some hefty contours in there and lots of ground covered, no doubt in the freezing cold and the dark.
What I find interesting here, and again, it's a challenge of our local Rogaines, the maps on the small side, that if you're some of the faster runners, you tend to get all of the controls. But this challenge here where so many of the controls are not visited, you have to be pretty cutthroat about which ones you're going to not spend any time on. And I think that's a really interesting challenge that I don't get enough. But I can see things like 67 to 54 to 82. You know, I'd be so tempted to do that. You know, why not? It's so close. Look at that. But you've got to take the contours very seriously. And these guys are obviously very experienced, knowing how fast they go uphill and how fast they go downhill on this rough terrain.
In a sense, it's easier when you know you're going to get all the controls. You just need to join the dots.
Yeah.
Whereas in this situation, the options just blow out. Staying in Canterbury, or kind of further south in Canterbury, the South Island Champs took in Acheron, a absolute classic Papo map. This was perhaps the last time that Acheron will be used.
Oh, why is that?
The pine trees, unfortunately, are falling victim to wilding pine control. So they've got to go.
And along so with this them, whole map is wilding pines?
Well, I think it's pine plantation with areas of wilding pines. I mean, this is all kind of second, third hand information, but apparently they need to go to protect the area from the wilding pine risk. Happy to be corrected if that's not true, but that's what I've heard.
Chop, chop.
I don't know about you, but I have spent many hours. There's some moving clay clearings on this map, which move depending on who the mapper is and where they believe they are.
These little suckers.
Yeah, I think these ones. No, the ones in the green forest.
Oh, in the green. Yeah.
And they tend to migrate around the place.
These little guys.
I've
had some,
more time has been spent looking for them than it would have taken to map them accurately.
Where's that boulder? It's one of these boulders, eh? There's one of these boulders that every time I talk to the Papo guys, they're referring to it as there's the moving boulder, because every mapper, every time they remapped it, they kept moving around. It's one of these like little vague ones.
Well, Acheron will look very different if it's used again for orienteering. Also, scrolling through the results from that weekend, I think the biggest battle took place on course 5A. While not in the same grade, Malcolm Ingham and Jenny Adams had a real ding-dong battle there on course 5A. Traded the lead multiple times, and Malcolm turned around a deficit in the last two legs to put 10 seconds on Jenny. So those splits they must have been close out on course. We've still got the central champs to come. Red Kiwis hosting coming up soon. But then busy club calendars with all these COVID postponed events.
Yeah, here's a funny story. Okay, so I've been involved in organizing four orienteering events this year, and the first three of them, the first one was like the first weekend of the first lockdown, cancelled. Then I was organizing another one that was the first weekend of the second lockdown, cancelled. And then one that had been postponed that got taken out by the extension of the Auckland lockdown, cancelled. And then I had this event this Sunday, and we got that COVID case in Central Auckland on like Wednesday. And I was like, I'm never organizing events. Yeah, am I causing this? Like, we've got a four out of four.
Well, hopefully we can keep it. Hopefully we can keep these events rolling over summer.
Yeah.
Now, coming into our close, we've got last month, you and I had a wager about who we thought was going to get the three-peat at Nationals. I didn't get it. Dave Middleton was on fire in men's 70. So got a few wins over Ross. Mark came close.
He did.
He was looking good.
Was looking good, yeah.
But unfortunately, a mispunch in the sprint. So neither of us picked it. But I've done a bit of a scan through the results. Honourable mentions to Val Robinson and Ian Holden for their three-peats in W80 and men-85 respectively. But there was another person who did a three-peat, at least one. I haven't exhaustively reviewed all of the results, but it looks like Jill Dalton got the three-peat in W75. So nice one, Jill. Neither of us picked it.
Yeah.
Something else to think about. I was, all this talk of NZ OMAP, I was having a cruise around Northland before we came online to do this. And I was wondering, it got me thinking, where are the places that you would most like to explore on NZ OMAP? Places you've driven past, places you've wondered about. You just want to see what they look like as an orienteering map. Have you got, Jim?
90 Mile Beach. That pine forest looks like Bootle level sand dune details, or Cavity Coast level sand dune details, or white.
All 90 miles
forest. So much forest there. And I've never actually been up that far. So we should probably head there over summer or over New Year's or something. Print out that section of the map and just check it out, I think.
Excellent access from 90 Mile Beach. You can drive the Grassy Knoll electric car the whole way up.
I can drive the leaf on the beach. I don't know if we'll make it.
But there definitely is a public access area down near Kaitaia that is like dog walking and that sort of thing. And that's on NZ OMAP.
Yeah.
I think that's so place keen to check out.
Yeah.
There's also I've spotted some data or some maps coming out near Leporoa of Kaingaroa Forest. Access may be a bit more difficult, but New Zealand's biggest pine forest. Surely there's got to be some stuff in there.
Yes, and pretty unique as well. The landforms there are not similar to many other places. Just that kind of Taupo, Rotorua contours, pretty interesting, very challenging. So yeah, I'm definitely eyeing up that area as the LiDAR maps come out. Yeah, cool. And there's still so much more of the country to go. So yeah, I'm going to keep watching this thing very closely.
More to come. All right, Jane.
Yep.
Thanks for the chat.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Until next time.
Yep. See ya.
Thanks for listening. If you liked the show, please support it by sharing this podcast with one person who would benefit from it. The best place to find more content like this is at genebeverage.nz, where you can find years of training blogs, race reports, podcasts, and coaching videos. If you don't want to miss future episodes, I recommend subscribing to my newsletter by visiting genebeverage.nz or by following on social media, Perfect Flow on Facebook and Gene Beverage on Instagram. For Q&A, send messages to nav@perfectflow.nz.